Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Andrew, we have perhaps answered the question, I mean pretty definitively here, what the plan is for Sting's final match. Sting and Darby defeat Takeshita Powerhouse Hobbs in the main event of the homecoming episode of AEW Dynamite in Jacksonville, Florida, outdoors in 40-some degree weather at Daly's Place. And then when it seems the show is over, it's not. Out come the Young Bucks, Nick Jackson dressed in an all white suit and a Kangol hat, and Matt Jackson in all black. Announcers say they look different, they're carrying themselves differently, and they appeared to be calling out Sting, or trying to overshadow Sting in this moment, but also call him out for a match, for Sting's retirement match. I had pitched this or speculated about it being, I think, a good fit, worthy of Sting's final match, if it's not going to be a singles match, which it ought not be. I mean, you could, but I'd rather have Darby out there doing a bunch of stuff and carrying the bulk of the action. We'll get into Sting's bump in a minute. But, you know, the Bucks are a big part of this company, and they went heel. If they play this right, I think it can feel like a worthy and an AEW-centric, AEW-world-appropriate final match for Sting. What's your initial reaction to this?
Yeah, I think it's a good fit for Sting because you're going to need a couple of guys to do the vast majority of the work. I mean, Sting's only going to take like a couple genuine, bumps on his back during the match, so you need...
And also fall off the scoreboard.
Yeah, he's going to do something insane, too,
yes.
Which I'm already worried about at this point in time. But, yeah, you're going to need some smaller guys. And the thing is, like, some people might want, Sting to face somebody from his past. But, like, he's been around for so long. I don't even know. What, are you going to bring in, like, Goldberg or DDP or somebody? Like, so I think if you want somebody modern, you want, like, a first-time matchup and two guys that really, like, mean a lot to, I guess, AEW. I think that's pretty much on the high end of choices they could do right now.
I like it, and the Bucks can just take crazy bumps for Sting, and they can be bump machines for him. They can put him over and be obnoxious and let the fans, instead of chanting, this is awesome in AEW, hopefully be chanting for Sting and against the Bucks by the time we get to this match if they, play this right. Because, I think they can get the fans worked up into a state of mind of just really wanting to see Darby and Sting shut them up and show them up. And I hope that's the approach they take in the build to the match, and I think the Bucks could be really effective with it. I think some time off might be good for them hitting the reset button on more than just their demeanor and their ring gear. What'd you make of the Bucks' new look, by the way?
I enjoyed it, actually. they look like heels. They look like a couple of jerks. What was the name of the hat that you said he was wearing?
The Kangol hat, Kate.
Kangol?
K-A-N-G-O-L. Look it up. That's
interesting. Didn't know that had a name.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. Yeah, I just looked it up. Yeah, that's what that was.
Okay. Yeah. No, I thought I thought it was a nice little reset for him.
Yeah. So, I'm not crazy about the Callis family being like sort of in the background on this. Like, I think the Callis family, Takeshita and Hobbs should be protected and pushed, and it should be, a big thing. And for this match, yes, it's good. It was a TV main event and all that, and they'll be fine. And Ross talked up Hobbs, and Takeshita's, really good and all that. But it did sort of feel like, all right, sweep them out of the way so the big stars can come out. And I think if there's a negative to anything that happened here, it's that. Because Hobbs and Takeshita against Sting and Darby, if promoted right, could have been Sting's final match. And instead, they do fall back to, AEW legacy stars, AEW originals, EVPs in the box. I frankly like the match better. There's a little bit of, sweep these guys out of the way when you are kind of going to be depending on them to be important players. So not a harsh critique, but I would say that visually that's the only thing. But at the same time, as the counterpoint, even if I had brought that up at a meeting, I could make my own counterpoint, which is, well, we need it. We need the Bucks coming out to be at the end of a big match that people care about. And this was, a tornado match, and Hobbs and Takeshi got in a lot of offense, and, we'll keep them up again. But, got to transition to something else, and we also want to do a finish. So I get it. I don't even know that I have a great counterexample, so I'm kind of arguing against my own point. But it is just sort of a negative that comes along with it. It felt like they were diminished just a little bit, given that by the end it was sort of like, who they wrestle? Oh, yeah, those guys.
I'm with you on that, because they spent like so much time doing nothing with Takeshita, and then the past few weeks they finally started to seem to like get behind him again. He went over Darby clean. And it seems like ideally you would have just had them beat like Kyle Fletcher and maybe like Sammy Guevara if he was still in the group at that point, two of the lesser stars. I'm not a big fan of that, but also at the same time I get it. Like, it's a feel-good story, Sting's end of his career. I don't think people will be really thinking about this in a couple of months, but short term, it's not a great move for them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk about Sting's jump off the stage at Daly's place, doing a Scorpion Death Drop on Hobbs. They had two tables set up. They overshot the first table. I think AEW and wrestling promotions and wrestlers in general would be, it'd be good to hire like someone who, I don't know, would it be a degree in physics or mathematics, or someone who's good at pool, who just knows like billiards, who knows angles? Because if you leap off a stage, you don't need a table like right under it. You need to move out like 2 feet, 2-3 feet. So you hit both, because Sting's bump would have been a lot less dangerous. It was going to be dangerous, and we see why. Any miscalculation and the impact can be great, and I hope he's fine. But he was talking to Darby and talking to the Flair and talking to the doctor. And I mean, I don't take lightly, that type of landing that he had, but just move the tables out a little bit so you land on both, and that'll break your fall a little more. And instead he landed on one and then fell backwards with great force on the back of his neck and head. And boy, was he, if he wasn't hurt, he was selling convincingly. So yeah, I'm fine not seeing 60 something year old Sting on his look what I can do, look what I'm willing to give back to the business tour. I think it's selfish of fans to want that, and I think it's ill-advised of just a mistake for Tony Khan to allow it. Sting doesn't need to do that stuff. He can do his signature moves in the ring and do safer things, and fans will still adore him. I don't think anybody wants to see him. Well, no, of course nobody wants to see him get hurt. So anyway, that's my take. How about yours, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, too, it's not even the first or the second time that he's had like a bad experience with the table. He had that one where he was like trying to jump outside of the ring and he landed on his knees. Had the one where Sammy Guevara did this over the, this top rope move on him and he didn't move out of the way in time. And then this, I mean, they should have just even set up like three tables. Like, you can make it look ridiculous. Who cares if he goes through three? But yeah, when he did that, I was like, in my head, I was like, oh my God, like, what if this is the end of his career? He's not making it to Revolution.
Yep.
Like, it's just so pointless at this point in time to risk something like that. Especially at 64, I think he's turning 65 in a month or so.
It's kind of the definition of crazy. I hope he's fine in the short run and can finish his career, of course. Even just him taking the flat back bump he took. I'm trying to remember what move it was. He was always Takeshita. He was doing stinger splashes, and he hit Hobbs, but then Takeshita knocked him down. Like, even just him at his age doing flat back bumps, I don't know. I mean, but I hope he makes it. But I also, I mean, what kind of pain or ramifications are there going to be 2 years from now because of this stuff that he's doing? And so, yeah, it's not what I want to watch. I mean, yes, you can admire him for what he's giving back, but I mean, do you really want? Is it really worth it for you sitting at home or in the crowd to see Sting do this to his body and take the chances at his age that he's taking for a little thrill that you can have at the expense of maybe him, how he's going to feel later in life? I mean, that was Ole Anderson's, grumpy old man critique of Mick Foley, but he wasn't wrong. Those bumps were going to add up, and Dynamite Kid ended up in a wheelchair. So I don't want to belabor the point, but I want to make the point and emphasize it and then move on. I think it's a bad idea. And I think everyone should be letting Sting know you're not scoring points with us doing this. And we'd be completely happy. In fact, happier, not cringing and worrying about you, but seeing you use your charisma and your signature safer spots to tell stories in the ring.
Yeah, the thing that stands out to me as very odd is that that's never how Sting got over in the first place.
Yes.
He didn't do that in WCW in the early 90s. He didn't do it as Crow Sting. He didn't do it in TNA. He didn't do it as Joker Sting. He didn't do it in WWE for that
brief run. Keep going. There's all these other Stings.
Yeah, and in a weird way, so the movie The Wrestler, the Mickey Rourke one, I always thought that was ridiculous at the time that they had Randy the Ram do such like a crazy death matches. I'm like, legends wouldn't do that at that age. And I would tell my friends that who didn't get wrestling. I'm like, yeah, it's not, they don't really do it at that point in their careers. And I am wrong because Sting is doing crazy stuff like that. And he's older than Randy the Ram was in that movie by probably a decade.
Yep. Yep. Really good comparison. And it's true. There are things that seem unrealistic at the time that come to fruition. And you're like, well, it was more foreshadowing than documenting how things had been.
Yeah.
So let's pause here and introduce the show. And then we've got people lining up on the phone lines and perhaps emails. I haven't checked the inbox yet. And got a bunch of emails too. So we've got a lot of topics to talk about on today's show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, January 10th, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show. I am just happy that so far, to the best of my knowledge, I have not even once said 2023. I don't know why, because every year for years, I've gotten the year wrong. At some point, as the calendar changed, then here I am 10 days into the month, done a bunch of podcasts, and I don't think I've gotten it wrong yet. So I'm patting myself on the back for that, because every time I say 2024, I just smile, like a little more proud than I probably should be. Anyway, we're here talking AEW Dynamite. And I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. And I host a bunch of podcasts, including the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows following Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision, and the Wade Keller Podcast, including the weekly flagship. That's our blue logo show. This is our red logo show with the post shows with our kind of live call-in format. And then the blue shows are more traditional podcasts. And we put up classic interviews and do some other formats there. So if you haven't subscribed to both yet, I recommend you do so. Search Wade Keller in your podcast app and subscribe for free to the Red and Blue Logo shows. Later this week, the flagship will drop Thursday night with Todd Martin as my guest co-host. Today we put up our flashback to the Jake Roberts interview that I conducted? I think it was today or yesterday. So we got some really cool flashback. Yeah, it was yesterday. We put up my interview from 10 years ago with Jake the Snake Roberts, and he talked about visiting Raw that week. Can't believe that was 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And sharing memories. And then we also added a bonus Joel Gertner interview reminiscing about ECW days and other things that Pat McNeil conducted that same week. So cool stuff always on both feeds. And while you're at it, search PW Torch and subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast and our PW Torch VIP free sample feed. Both logos should pop up. The colorful one is the free live cast with a different topic each day of the week and different hosts. And then the charcoal colored show is our VIP free sample page. And that's where, if you're an iPhone, Apple podcast user, the native Apple podcast app, you can actually upgrade within that app using your Apple account to upgrade to our ad-free versions of our free shows and also get our entire VIP podcast lineup, which is just for our paid members. All right, so the other voice you hear on the show is Andrew Socek, speaking of the PW Torch Daily Cast. And speaking of homecoming, Andrew, it's been a long time since we did a show together. You and Mike McMahon on hiatus, as Mike's schedule for non-wrestling life prevented him from watching AW shows live and really just carving out time to do podcasts. And so we're going to try to work out a time for Mike to be on as co-host here in the next month or two when his schedule allows. But it's great that we worked out having you on here early in the new year. How is life? How have you been?
I've been good. I am getting to the – like every week I've been talking wrestling for, you know, an hour and a half or so with Mike.
Yeah.
So it is really weird not to have somebody to talk wrestling with.
It's
just like you get into that habit of like needing to express your opinions on – I was just texting Mike last night about like, oh, did you see this like Jinder Mahal? Like, I'm like, we would have done a solid half hour on that. And he's like, oh, yeah, like, it's not so –
I wish you guys just, like, instead of texting, just, like, let's just record something for 10 minutes. We'll put up, like, 10 minutes you guys just talking about this stuff
and give your fans,
you know, who are jonesing for you a little nugget.
Yeah, I would like to hear Mike's. Mike was much more of a ranter, and then I would just kind of sit there and giggle and chime in. And
yeah.
So hopefully we'll get back to that when his time frees up.
Of course. Yes, of course. Yeah, by the way, Rich Fan, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Rich Fan, and I talked for close to an hour about that topic and the whole thing that kind of the foundation of it, which is who deserves world title shots and when, how much does it matter, when is it, you know, the whole range of things and comparing the way the Continental Classics or the Continental Crown title was challenger was first decided among, you know, four sort of rando mid-carders, and then Hook throwing out the challenge, which I didn't have a problem with and was intrigued by and wanted to see the follow-up. And then, of course, the Jinder Mahal thing, which I also didn't have a problem with. Everybody's fighting over things. I had more of an issue with the Continental Crown and the follow-up to that than I did Hook and Jinder for different reasons. But Rich and I went in-depth on that, on the VIP exclusive, everything with Rich and Wade. So we get together just about every Tuesday and review the top stories of the week and sometimes go really in-depth on the most controversial, often social media-based story. Rich is our kind of go-to guy for what's going on social media, and he was able to kind of brief the people who aren't also in that show on exactly what happened. But, Andrew, this is about you, and it's about tonight's Dynamite. Good to have you back. We got a lot more to talk about, including the Hook Joe thing and Swerve and Hangman. Seems like maybe we're setting up a triple threat, so we'll get into that and much, much more. Looking forward to this. Let me give out the phone number, and then we're going to just promptly get the call. So I don't want to leave people waiting too long on hold. If you want to get in line on the phone lines, the number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know that you want to be on the show and you're not just calling to listen in. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. Please note it's now at gmail.com, not at pwtorch.com. We're having a bunch of emails that we're not getting to us through our in-house server, so we just switched to Gmail because it just would be more reliable for spam filtering and that type of thing. So be sure it doesn't autofill to at pwtorch or we might not get it. So it's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll get to emails during the show also. Andrew, let's begin taking calls and see where callers lead us here on various topics. And we will start with Chris in Mount Pearl, Newfoundland, or Newfoundland, or I'll just say NF. How's it going, Chris?
Gentlemen, good evening. How are we?
Doing good. Hanging in there. Yeah.
Yeah, it is Newfoundland, but we'll forgive you, Wade. You're a long way away. I know that. It's all good.
Yeah.
First of all, Andrew, great to hear you on the airwaves again. You and Mike was one of the highlights of my week, so it's good to have you back talking wrestling. It's really great to hear that. And I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this, but Wade, how's the knee?
haven't even thought about it since the last time someone asked, so it must be in good shape. Thank you so much. Yes.
I got to keep it
I hope
going.
This doesn't last into 2025, unless I re-injure it or something. the bit is still funny. I'm just a little worried it might go on longer than I'm amused by it. Anyway, go ahead, Chris. Thank you for your concern.
I got to wonder, and I think there's a larger point here. Do you think there was an issue with condensation in the ring tonight? Those ring lights are really hot. It was about 50 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know what that is in real people temperature. But people, especially in the first couple of matches, they seemed really clunky. Like Hangman and Cesaro are capable, or Claudio are capable of a much better match than that. The eight-man tag seemed really off. And everything just seemed kind of clunky. Like Sammy Guevara, when he went up for that moonsault to the outside, just took an age to get up there and steady himself, which, to be fair, is situation normal for him, but everything just felt really clunky. Do you think that could have been something like safety related in the ring tonight?
Andrew, what do you think? Did that jump out to you that things were clumsier and more tentative than usual?
I thought something seemed a little off, nothing major tonight, but I also didn't catch that it was so cold out. So now that I'm hearing that, I imagine wrestling in 50 degrees like outdoors is much different than being indoors at 70 degrees. So I imagine that's going to throw you off a little bit. So I think that probably makes some sense, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'll ask around, Chris. I'll see if that was an issue.
Yeah, just something that came to mind. But more to the point, I thought Swerve and Joe specifically were excellent in that segment earlier. Hangman was a little too yelly for my liking, and I could have done without Hook coming out. It just felt like a parade of entrance themes at that point. But Swerve and Joe really gave that quiet intensity that, Wade, I know in particular you're a big fan of. There wasn't any unnecessary overmodulation. They were cold to the point of almost being scary. And I thought that mission statement and that really made me want to see that match. I really hope it isn't a triple threat. I think Swerve and Joe could be great. The problem is one of them has to win. But, yeah, I wanted to get your thoughts on that segment, how that unfolded.
Yeah, I first of all, I like Hangman tonight, and I liked him walk into the ring and looking like a dead serious person on a mission. But he does have a tendency to Adam Copeland's like this too, where like there's like level 1 to 3 and there's level like 8 to 11, but there's no 4, 5, 6, 7. And with Hangman, sometimes when he's intense, like just being at 7 or 8 is fine. We don't need to go to 10 or 11. It didn't jump out to me as much tonight as it has other times. Where like sometimes when he's like doing that promo where it's just vile, and here's what I'm going to do to you, and you're like, whoa. And he goes, and here's what else I'm going to do to you. You're like, whoa. And then like 3 minutes later, he's still naming all these things he's going to do to someone. You're like, okay, that's enough. But I thought it was pretty good tonight from him. But yeah, Swerve and Joe were great. Joe is just owning that ring. And Swerve is carrying himself like every bit the main eventer in waiting. You've got Joe and Swerve, two heels, and they're staying heel. Joe's ripping on, it seems like he's ripping on the local community. And Swerve, you know, being Swerve, still, I guess, in heel mode. It seems like they're heels who fans want to cheer. And so it's like, it's a pick'em. And then Hangman comes out. I'm like, so it's going to be an even tougher choice because, you know, lots of fans like Hangman, especially if they do a three-way. Andrew, talk about that segment and things that Chris and I just brought up.
Yeah, overall, I thought the segment was pretty good. I thought it was a little awkward the way that, like, Swerve just, like, turned away and walked away because the segments just don't ever end like that. And then, yeah. So you knew somebody else was, like, coming
out.
It was
that Prince Nana's urging, so at least it wasn't Swerve doing it on his own. But, yeah, it did stand out, like, wait a second.
Yeah, because he didn't say anything in return. He just, like, backed away and walked off. And I was like, I can't imagine, like, even, like, heel rock doing somebody, you know, pick your person. And then Hangman, I think, basically did the exact same thing. If you overlook that, you know, just to get the Hook. Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought Joe was doing a solid job as champ so far. I guess the thing for me is I want to have Joe as the champion for a bit. It doesn't need to be a year, but, you know, maybe 6 months. And I really want Swerve to be champ eventually too. So I'm like, I don't really want this match right now. I imagine Hangman's taking the fall if it's a three-way.
I hope so. You know, I mean, we've kind of been there, done that with him, and Hangman's good, but I don't think he's the answer to getting AEW to the next level or, you know, there's Hangman's sort of been the poster boy for AEW kind of spinning their wheels with characters and with feuds and stuff, and people just kind of existing in a little bubble on an island of their buddies, kind of rehashing feuds and making references to things that now are 5, 6, 7 years old and we're on social media and YouTube. And, you know, I think AEW should have built its own history that feuds are built on, not things that happen on the indie scene or Japan or YouTube or social media. And you also want to build a fresh history in year five that has nothing to do with what you're doing in year two or three. And Swerve and Joe feel like that. I mean, it's weird saying that about Joe for as long as he's been around, but he is fresh. And people have been wanting to see Joe really be featured on top in a national company at the level that AEW is at and be committed to him. And I'm with you. I want to see Andrew. I want to see Joe champ for a while. I want Swerve to be champ. Maybe going to it now can be a boost to Swerve, but then something happens to put, you know, move him in onto something else. But he's the one who circles back and 4, 6, 8, 12 months and unseats Joe. But this initial feud is something then you can kind of look back on as the beginning of something that they went full circle on. Because if Joe passes the title to Swerve, I don't want it to be soon. But I like what I see with Swerve. I want to see if it works. I'm not 100% sure they can build around Swerve and get to the next level, but I don't know that there's a better candidate, and there's a lot of good indications it's worth trying and has a really good shot. So yeah. Well, Chris, I'll throw back to you. Any follow-up on any of that or a different topic?
Yeah, I'll follow up on that a bit. I can't book anything past August simply because I don't see any world where Will Ospreay doesn't win the title at Wembley. I'd put money on
point.
That happening. So yeah. I don't know who
maybe,
he needs to win it
maybe,
from.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's
Hangman,
a heel
maybe?
And Swerve. That's Swerve's big babyface moment is beating Will Ospreay and not Joe.
Yeah. I don't think that they want any moment other than Ospreay standing tall with the title at Wembley. So I don't know how they get to that. But I want Swerve to have his shot at the top. And the fact that WWE still is reluctant to give a black person the world title, putting Swerve on top really does send a message that, frankly, AEW has dropped the ball entirely on sending in their entire five-year history. So there's that aspect to consider as well. Just to shift on to one of the other topics I wanted to bring up. I'm glad you mentioned about Sting being 64. He turned 65 just after Revolution. I think it's like 2 weeks after the show. Wade, we're about the same age, but you are in far better shape than I could ever hope to be. I'm pretty sure I can say you could not do the things that Sting is doing, even being considerably younger than he is. So why is he doing
it? Oh, I could do it, but I wouldn't. I would be in bed for, you know, more often. I mean, I can leap off of high places, but I just am not trained to land, and it's not. This is the thing. I could be 20 years younger, and I don't think the result would be much different.
Exactly.
Like, you just got to be trained to do it. But seriously, when you're 65 and have the mileage that Sting has, and what it was that made him who he was, it wasn't these types of moves and these types of bumps. So, yeah. I mean, even if Sting was like 45, I'm not sure that I'd be saying much different, but it becomes the kind of the undercurrent of ridiculousness is so much stronger with him at the age that he's at. But even if he's on a retirement tour in his mid-40s, as Andrew pointed out, it's not what he's known for. So why do it?
No.
You've got the rest of your life healthy.
It's not like with Jeff Hardy, where nobody wants really to see Jeff Hardy doing what he's doing now anyway, but that's what he's known for. But
exactly.
If Sting just stands on the apron, tags in, does a Stinger Splash, Scorpion Death Drop, Scorpion Death Lock, very safe. Everybody's going to pop for all of those moves. He yells at the crowd a few times, goes back, collects his paycheck. Nobody thinks any less of him. It's just it's crazy.
So, and the show's no worse off. I mean, stunt bumps should not be the be-all, end-all for very many people. I mean, for Darby, it doesn't even have to be. It is, but it doesn't have to be because Darby's got other attributes too.
Well, Darby's like a third of Sting's age. Well, not quite, but definitely under half
and
his age. And we expect that from him, right? So I think
exactly.
What I really want, this is my larger point here. I would like for AEW... Specifically, I would like Shad Khan to hire Lance Storm and handcuff him to Tony Khan. And so anytime Tony Khan does anything, whether it's booking a show or tweeting or setting up an incredibly ugly layout for the stage at Daly's Place so that everything is off-center all night, he has to run it by Lance Storm first. Because if there is a man who needs a filter right now, it's Tony Khan. I thought Vince McMahon needed a filter, but Tony does so badly right now. Whether it's picking unnecessary fights on social media or whatever he's doing, like, can somebody please just rein this man in and take away his toys before he ruins his company?
Andrew, it's been a while since you've gotten to chime in on this or listen or chuckle as Mike rants about it, but you're aware of it. You and Mike were texting about it. What's your take on where Tony Khan is today and how you feel about him?
Yeah, I mean, it's just embarrassing. I think Tony is maybe 2 years older than me, and I don't go on Twitter and do stuff like that. It's a bad look for him. It looks petty. And the whole thing too, like, I didn't understand it. And I go on Reddit just to like see what's kind of going on, what people are talking about in wrestling, and I didn't see like any threads of people saying like, oh, we're pissed off that Hook has a title shot, this is ridiculous. So I didn't see this backlash that he was talking about in the first place. And second, like, it doesn't really matter that, like, if you go to WWE, like, in Jinder Mahal, like, beat up Seth Rollins, like, that's the storyline. It didn't, you know, he doesn't need to have those wins because he's just saying, like, hey, you attacked me, I'll give you a shot because I'm going to beat you up. Like, he just – so I don't get why Tony decided to pick that fight, especially at a time, too, when more people are liking WWE than they have in the past 20 years or so. So, yeah, I'm, like, embarrassed for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Lance Storm would, you know, someone with his perspective, if not Lance specifically, would be a good counter perspective on a day-to-day basis. And I think would rein in some of this stuff. I mean, the idea that you would, at the level that Tony Khan is at and the position he's in, I can't imagine Paul Levesque, and Paul's not that much older than Tony Khan, like a dozen years. Mm-hmm. And it's not nothing, but it's not like Vince McMahon. It's like, he's going to make a snide comment like on a press conference, but it's going to be sort of passive aggressive or kind of snarky, but sort of like, I don't know, in a moment. But you don't get this image of him just sitting around with his phone, like getting all worked up over some rando saying some random thing who's just a troll, and then feeding that troll exactly what they're looking for and having that be something he's got time in the day to do. You know, I mean, Paul Levesque has talked about, I don't have the bandwidth to train to have a comeback match. Like, I got too much stuff going on between professional stuff and family stuff and taking care of his health. Where does Tony get the bandwidth for this, and what is his social media time offsetting? What is it displacing that could make AEW better or just make him happier? Like, just down to read a book. Mm-hmm. Get up. Sean Radican has a really good column on pwtorch.com that I hope everybody checks out, where he talks about his personal journey through social media and gives advice to Tony and says, you know, what I also feel. It's like the stuff that's said, it's like a drop in the water on a lake. It just dissipates if you don't obsess about it. It's just the stuff doesn't matter. Of course, you're going to say things to poke you. Don't. Who cares? Like, if you read it, who cares? And better yet, don't even put yourself in a position to read it. Have the confidence that you're doing something that makes sense. Reasonable people might disagree, and that's not anything to get worked up over. And it's certainly not something worthy of ranting and trying to pull out some example from the other company that you think is worse. That just leads to a thousand people going, yeah, think about all the title shots you've given out. Here's all these examples of bad title shots given out by AEW because they have no criteria. They're worse than WWE, but neither are great. And we can pick on them, but it's a wrestling business where you're feeding matches to a very hungry TV and pay-per-view industry, and they can do a better job. But the fact is there's going to be some title shots that are a little flaky in terms of the rationale for granting someone a shot at a title. And, you know, I'd like to see them do a better job, explaining, framing, planning ahead. But the fact is it's just not that big of a deal. Nobody would be talking about this because Tony's early in the set. It was very early in this Hook storyline. If he's confident in it, just say, well, these people are ripping on it now. In a week and a half, they're going to see it was no big deal, and we thought it through, and it worked out. Chris, back to you.
I think Lance Storm, actually, the more I think about it, is just a great choice overall because he's well-respected. He's got a logical head on his shoulders. He's a great trainer as well. He's trained some of the best people to come out of training schools recently. And Tony, the difference between Tony and the worst parts of the wrestling internet is about $3 billion. That's it. He's just a smark with a lot of money. And when that person is running a wrestling company specifically for people like him, I've been saying this for a while, no North American wrestling promotion has ever succeeded on a major scale purely through quality of matches. If that were the case, right, Ring of Honor would have beaten WWE 20 years ago. It's never been the case, and it's never going to be the case because the mainstream public doesn't care how good a match is. They want characters. They want reasons for people to fight, and Tony isn't giving us that for the most part. And it's to the point now where he's decided to abandon that and just go for the sports aspect. Great. That's fine. But then if you're going to separate yourself from WWE like that, you can't compare the reasons that you're giving title shots because you're completely different entities now. So you're contradicting yourself. I could go on for this about this for hours, but I've spoken about wrestling so much over the past week, I think I should let other people have a shot. I do want to go with one more quick thing. The tribute thing tonight.
Yeah.
I don't feel like there was very much mention made of it. I was wondering why the heck we had this random 8-person tag with teams that made no sense. And then it was they mentioned it was a tribute thing. If I'm running a tribute 8-person tag, I don't think I'm announcing somebody from a graveyard, just throwing that out there. But more to the point, remember when Konosuke Takeshita beat Kenny Omega twice? Because nobody else does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that guy is so, so good. He's unreal good. I heard him on Jericho's podcast. He speaks great English. He should have been in the ring with Hangman and Swerve. But instead, he's losing and being ushered out of the arena. So I'll leave you on that question. What are they doing with Takeshita? Why is he being pushed back down the card? Is there anything going on that we don't know about? Like, why can't they just let this guy be successful?
Thanks, Chris. Good question. Yeah, I mean, Takeshita, I'm not saying there's only one opportunity to treat somebody as a phenomenon who it just arrives on the scene and just – like just shoots themselves to the top through success, and you put the machine behind them, the announcers and the wrestlers are talking about him and just marveling at his skill, and he's this prodigy who just comes and if you have them just sort of merge into the speed of traffic and they're just another guy, it's a lot harder. It's like, you know, deadlifting without momentum at all. It's just, it becomes more difficult. So I do feel it's been a lost opportunity. And when you have Don Callis as a spokesman, then you don't need to worry about Takeshita not being a polished, experienced pro wrestling style promo to sell himself. It just, that becomes a non-factor. So yeah, I mean, to me, it was a missed opportunity. If everything was going great otherwise in every other way, you'd be like, oh, okay, that works out fine. But Don Callis managing a dominant Takeshita as a world champion is a viable alternative to consider compared to Joe. Andrew, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't get it at all what they've done with him because, like, the biggest storyline they could have had for at least a little while was, like, him beating Kenny Omega and, like, really making a big deal out of that. But Omega, like, really didn't come after him for revenge or anything. They kind of dropped it. And for, as we've seen, like, the person who gets the most heat in the company – maybe outside of, like, Christian, is Don Callis. And they don't use him, like, anywhere near as much as they should. And if they really just focused on him and Takeshita as, like, this major heel act, like, I could have seen him. I know, like, Todd Martin, I believe, like, I don't know if he pitched it or somebody. I think a reader, like, originally brought it up. Like, him, like, Takeshita beating MJF, I was like, yeah, I could see that. Like, I in a different timeline, he would be champ right now. And instead, he's kind of aimless.
Yeah. And I'm not against Joe being champion, but one of the side effects of Joe being champion is this guy again, this guy who was RH champ and TNA champ and was a Raw announcer. And it's like, wait, he's the guy in this upstart. What's the term? Rich Van uses the underdog brand. I can't think of the term right now. And you've got Joe, I love Joe and I love that he's getting this chance. So I'm endorsing this move. I'm just acknowledging that there's a negative that Joe has to overcome, which is him in 2024, really? Where Takeshita, it's like, if you're AW and you're confident and you've got this big platform and this big budget and a major cable station, you get to, like, basically elevate somebody who wasn't on the radar 2-3 years ago and have them seem like the red hot current thing. And, you know, with all of Joe's attributes, that's not what he would protect, but Don Callis managing Takeshita would. So, you know, there's pros and cons to those things. But, yeah, Chris is right. Now he has just sort of merged in the speed of traffic. He's just another guy, and he's not being protected. And it's going to be a lot harder to – if they decide they really want to try to get the most out of him, they've made it more difficult to get the most that they could have gotten out of him compared to what they could have, I should say.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, let's go to Larry in Beardstown, Illinois, and then on deck is Keith in Virginia. Larry, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite?
Hey, it's been a while. It's been a while since I've called. Sounds like you guys are still carrying on the greatness of your show, Blatant Brown Nose.
Well,
here. It's been a while, but hey, I just wanted to make a quick comment on the end of the show. Well, one thing I noticed the camera cut away. Was it me or was Ric Flair looked like he was legitimately having trouble getting out of the ring? Not, you know, as any part of any wrestling show, but he just kind of looked like, yeah, I know Ric Flair's old, but that was kind of caught my eye, and I thought, oh, wow, that's kind of bad. I didn't know if you guys had noticed that or not.
I'm used to Flair looking like he's moving pretty gingerly. You know, we talk about Sting doing stuff. I mean, Flair's out there, you know, throwing chops and getting physical in the ring. Also, at his age and with what he's been through, it's not just Sting who is, you know, perhaps doing age and physical condition inappropriate things. He was moving gingerly. I didn't notice myself, but there was a brief transition from the end of my DVR 2-hour window to switching over to the Bucks coming out. So I missed like 20 seconds and just going to the live TBS feed. So maybe I missed something. Andrew, anything about you?
I was watching him as he originally went down the ring steps, and he did look pretty gingerly, and I was nervous that he was going to trip. I don't know. I just like whenever he walks now, I just kind of like think something might happen. Yeah. And inside the ring, that was, not the greatest of his chops. And that was the absolute slowest, eye poke I think I've ever seen. Like, you know, Takeshita probably shouldn't have to sell that at this point. Yeah, it was, he's not moving around so well, I'd say.
Larry.
I wanted to make a comment, maybe an opinion, you could say about the end of the show, and I'm watching it and the Young Bucks music hits, and my initial reaction, you know, when they came out was, you know, that they have a different look and everything, but I was being a fan, I thought, eh. And I started thinking, you know, why these guys? They could do, are there other people that they could set something up with Sting and Darby, or have a history with either of them? And then I it'll sound weird, but it's almost like I snapped out of it. It's like, you know what? You've been a fan for 40 years. Give them the time and the opportunity to build something. See where it goes from here. Why did they come out? What's their issues? How is it going to play out? I know that sounds a little weird to say, but I went from, you know, those two to, well, let's give it a chance. This could be something.
I think that what you went through is fair. Andrew, what do you think?
Yeah, what I like a lot, actually, and I think they do a terrible job for this for the most part of promoting matches way ahead of time. Like, this is almost 2 months. So we have like 2 months to figure out what's going on, get excited for the match, really put over that it's Sting's final appearance. And hopefully they finally really get to do that, because I think one of my nitpicks from tonight was the fact that we didn't get to hear from Sting beforehand and say like, hey, this is my last time in Daly's place. Like, this, you know, this is where I debuted. I'm going to go out and win this match, whatever he's going to say. But I think they've been doing a pretty bad job until you know, really building up and getting over every city he's in. Like, hey, this is the last time you're going to get to see him.
I'm sort of nodding along, but then there's also all the history of Sting's promos always, like almost always, a little qualifier there, being letdowns. you know, like, Sting was most successful when he said nothing and did nothing and sat in the rafters, because he has this aura about him that very few people in the last 40 years have had. And then there's this athleticism he had when he was young, the spring in his legs for somebody his size. And there's a lot of attributes he has, but keeping his train of thought and having his voice match the aura has never been a strength of his. And so there's part of me that, like, I like what I hear from Sting, and then I'm like, by the end, I'm like, oh, that wasn't very good. So I have mixed feelings, Andrew, about that. I know what you're saying, though, because this Sting's farewell tour, shouldn't we do more to make that apparent? And it felt half-hearted, and to a degree it still does. Maybe there's a way to produce something where there's some post-production pizzazz and editing put in, where it's not just him standing live with a microphone in front of his face, losing his train of thoughts on the 40th anniversary, the first time he lost his train of thoughts on live TV.
Yeah. Well, just like a small note, like I was there in Minneapolis when they were there at the – oh, wait, no, Target Center. Is that St. Paul? I should know this. Anyway.
Oh, man. Yes, you should. Minneapolis.
I'm very embarrassed. Anyways, I was there.
Xcel Energy Center, St. Paul.
Yes, there we go. They did not
– Sports Center, Bloomington.
Oh, yeah. They did not announce at all that, like, Sting was going to be there. And he just, like, showed up on – until, like, I was actually at the show, and they're like, oh, yeah, he's going to be on Rampage. I was like, wow, like, I had no idea that was coming. Maybe that's, like, more on local marketing, but still, they could have, like, mentioned that the week before that Sting was going to be in the arena.
For sure. For sure, yeah. All right, Larry, back to you.
That's about all I wanted to bring up. We can get some other callers on here, and it's kind of nice to call in again. I'll probably try and call again next week. Until then, so long from the land of Lincoln.
Yeah, great. Thank you. I appreciate it, Larry, and Happy New Year. If I'm still allowed to say that, I think so, since I haven't said it to you yet. Take care. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1, and that'll flag you on the switchboard so we know you want to be on the show. All right, we'll go to Keith in Virginia next. Keith, thanks for holding. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, guys. You guys are doing a great job, and how are you doing tonight?
Good. Thanks for asking.
It's good to hear from you again, Andrew. The show is sorely missed. You came a long way from TNA to talking about soap to where it went. To where it went. So I hope to hear you guys back at some point. Watching tonight's show, it gave me WCW vibes. And perhaps I'm being overly dramatic. I'm starting to think I'm not, because the other day I was talking wrestling with my manager at work. My manager is 22 years old. He likes to talk about how kids these days are being raised by their tablets. I say that to say that the final match tonight had Sting get a pin over Hobbs. The last person to get a pin in WCW was Sting, and Ric Flair was also in the main event. That's ridiculous. That was almost 23 years ago. There's no reason for that to be happening these days. And this, you know, everything in the universe has a flaw or flaws. Making a mistake, there's nothing wrong with making mistakes, but the thing that kind of hit me in the gut watching the show was that they feel like they're resigned to what they're going to be, which is a death sentence. You had the Young Bucks come out, and I know they didn't do much, but it felt like, well, we're playing heels again, so you know, you just kind of got to do. That's what we're doing. It didn't feel genuine. When your backstage issues start overshadowing what you're doing right, and you stick your head in the sand and you start blaming, you know, people picking on us, and we can't do anything right. You've lost the fight because you're now making excuses. You're blaming everybody else but yourself. Tony Khan makes me embarrassed to be a fan of this company. And you know, he's a human like anybody else, but you can't let this be your whole identity. And tonight, watching Jericho come out to the ring and then playing his music so loud that you couldn't let anybody boo, it gave me Vince McMahon vibes. That's like, well, we're just going to tell you what you need, and you're going to have to deal with it. So those aren't questions, but it's kind of where I'm at with this whole product. And, you know, death by a thousand cuts. And a lot of these cuts, they're getting bigger and bigger by the day. So, yeah. Oh, by the way, Todd Martin, the Takeshita as a champion idea, he floated. It was from a email that came in the week before, and that was from me. So.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, there you go. Oh, nice. Yep. That was a good idea.
I agree. All right, but anyway, that's kind of just where I'm at.
Cool. Thanks, Keith. So, Andrew, you covered, you and I covered Impact Wrestling, TNA, as of the relaunch of the rebranding, what is old is new again. And you've seen them, you know, struggle and you know, from the beginning they were born out of trying to fill the void left by WCW. I mean, I know because I talked to Jerry Jarrett multiple times a week for a while about how he wanted, you know, he saw an opportunity for a second national company in absence of WCW. And long story short, TNA was born and they wanted to into the company to try to boost some of those early shows. And they were, you know, they took the NWA name at first, NWA-TNA, because they couldn't own WCW, but then, you know, and the NWA begat WCW, and people identified the NWA nationally as essentially just the same thing as WCW, just a transition during the Ted Turner bio time. So all of that was there. And it was present, you know, a lot. It was a more southern-based company, like WCW is perceived, as opposed to New York-based. Or Northeast Bay. So TNA went through that, and it had some pluses and minuses. WCW had a big core fan base, and makes sense to appeal to that base if you're trying to fill a void that was recently created through the, you know, cancellation and buyout of WCW. AEW, on the other hand, is coming a lot later in the process, and if you're still giving off vibes of, you know, we're trying to fill that void or that emptiness that left when WCW went out of business, it's a long time later, and a lot of those fans aren't fans anymore, but you can see it. I mean, the graphic presentation, they're just the colors. There's a lot about what Tony Khan does that, you know, Dynamite and Nitro. I mean, they're not even trying to hide it. And so that is there. And when you're featuring Flair and Sting, and Flair and Sting have been through WWE also, it's not like they're only WCW people, but there's definitely that vibe that this company is still kind of pulling from WCW nostalgia. Now it's pulling from other nostalgia too, New Japan nostalgia, PWG nostalgia, some TNA nostalgia also. So it's not just that, but that element is there. So in your time covering, analyzing TNA, and now from the beginning following and analyzing and talking weekly about AEW, how do you grade them as far as that goes? Have they struck a good balance? Is there something to be gained from that? Is it a big mistake? And, you know, as Keith said, you want to look like you're aspiring to be something new and not trying to just live off of nostalgia, live off of the past. And is there too much of that vibe going on right now with this company, Andrew?
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I mean, I think at first it probably made a lot of sense just to, like, let people know that this is a major player, and hey, remember the times of WCW for laughs fans, because also they like brought in like Tony Schiavone, the voice of Nitro, basically, and Jim Ross, who was not in WCW, but was like the main voice of WWF at the time, at the Monday Night Wars. So,
but well known as a WCW guy before that.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. But I think they have done some overkill a bit, especially like the branding of Collision just looks like Nitro did, which is also really odd because Tony Khan is not a fan of Eric Bischoff these days. So I'm kind of surprised he would want anything to do with that kind of style. I have my point of view as a guy who's been watching, you know, Sting since the late 90s. Where for me, it's like, oh, it's kind of cool that he's still around and trying to, like, you know, go out on this last big hurrah. But at the same time, like, when I was watching Nitro and Raw as, you know, in my teens, it would have been ridiculous to have, you know, Austin and Rock and Undertaker, you know, being treated, you know, somebody from 20, 30 years older. I can't even imagine who that would be, like Bruno Sammartino, like, you know, somebody from that era. Still competing on TV and being shown to be better than their talent. than their rising talent. That would have been absolutely ridiculous because WWE didn't really do that. When they did have people like that, like a Sergeant Slaughter, they were kind of treated as a joke. But there was no, like, legends there who were portrayed as, like, better than their, you know, second-tier talented people that could be main eventers someday. So I could definitely see people who are not 35 years and older just being like, this is ridiculous to see, you know, a 64-year-old man, like, beating up someone, you know, beating up Hobbs. Like, it makes no sense from that perspective.
Yeah. I know history is a little more – well, it's way more accessible, let's not understate it, than history used to be for previous generations because of YouTube. And just being able to look up anything and watch anything, you know, so much from the past. And the Monday Night War era was a peak era. It was a really big time. So I get the nostalgia for that versus the comparison to Bruno, which is apt in a lot of ways. But the difference is Bruno was a regional champion whose matches and peak promos you can't really access if you're 15, 20, 25, 30 years past his peak. Where with WCW, I mean, I don't know how many fans have watched the documentaries of Raw versus Nitro and listened to the podcasts, you know, reflecting on them and watched clips on YouTube. But that I feel like history in the from the, like, I guess the anywhere in the 90s on, the mid-80s is a little more murky, but it's there. It feels like it's everybody gets a chance to get oriented towards it, but that can also end up being not a crutch, but it can give a promoter like Tony Khan sort of permission to think, well, everybody has access to it. They all know it, so let's lean into it hard. And just because people are aware of it or they've watched a documentary doesn't mean they don't want their own era, their own wrestlers, their own generation. They don't want something that feels like it's a derivative nostalgia trip with a few people. And AEW initially, really, as much as Tony, you know, yes, there was Nitro and then there's Dynamite, two things that explode, and Tony Schiavone and all that stuff. Yes, there was some WCW stuff. But most people, I think, saw it as this bringing together of what Cody represented, what Kenny from Japan represented, what the Bucks from the indie scene represented. And it's this blend of all of that. And it still is, but it doesn't have, going full circle, enough of its own identity coming from that. It still feels like a collage of different things that have been patched together that different fan groups are passionate about. And Tony, as a super fan, is passionate about all of them. But what is AEW's identity in and of itself? And I don't know that it's grown out of that patchwork of other things into having its own identity. And say what you will about the Vince McMahon era of Raw and the Eric Bischoff era of Nitro, but when you think of them, you don't think of anybody else. You think of the Vince McMahon, WWF, WWE. When you think of the Nitro era, you think of Eric Bischoff and his vision. With Tony Khan, it's still this sort of this patchwork of other things. And that's the, you know, I know that, you know, Tony deservedly got a hard time when there was a video package on him. It said the visionary Tony Khan. But his vision is reliving his childhood and reliving his 20s and 30s as a fan and patching that stuff together. But it's not as cohesive and it's not forward-leaning. And we're getting a little theme tonight in the calls on that. And, you know, and understandably so when you have a show featuring Sting and Ric Flair. And if it weren't for them, we could be talking about why are they building around these young Bucks who are in their late 30s. They should be building around, you know, new acts in their 20s, but the Bucks are just little kids compared to Sting and Flair. So it's even – we could have this conversation with people half of Sting's age practically, but we're not. But that accentuates the issue that is there. Well, you know, but you're doing a Sting retirement tour. So, I mean, I don't want to argue against my own argument. I'm not against Sting on a retirement tour, but I think the reason it stands out is – AEW, it's not like a compliment to AEW's own self-built identity. It's a symptom of AEW not really having its own identity. I think that's the main critique that we're hearing. Andrew, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, there's nothing that you can really lay your finger on as to like what it is. I mean, the closest thing would just be like AEW is good matches, which doesn't mean a lot.
And I don't want to downplay good matches. I'll insert this real quick. I think good matches are better than bad matches or average matches. Yeah. But it's not the be-all, end-all. Like, your job isn't done. Like, if you're a good chef, if you want to open a restaurant, yes, being good at cooking really good meals and having great food is good, but you still need a restaurant with a good atmosphere and a good storefront, and you need advertising, and you need a great dining room and comfortable seats. Like, there's all these other things that go along with it. It's not just come for the food and ignore everything else. So that's the thing. It's like, it's great they have that to build on, but it sort of feels like they're just ready to rest on their laurels when it comes to that and just do the bare minimum otherwise when it comes to being forward-leaning in other ways. Go ahead, Andrew.
Oh, yeah, no, and just, like, beyond even that, you know, like, Sting and Flair, you know, younger people watching, I mean, the TNT champion is Christian, wait, 48, maybe? Edge is a top star right now. So there isn't, like, a lot of, yeah, younger people that people can say, like, hey, this is my guy. This is, you know, this is the, why I watch AEW. I watch it because it has, like, this feel to it. It's, yeah, I mean, it's not, even, like, a Lucha Underground had its own, like, very distinct feel to it, and AEW has never like truly developed that because it still feels like a patchwork, like, because to me, like, Samoa Joe does not feel like an AEW guy. He feels like a TNA guy, a WWE guy, and here he is very, very late into his career. I thought he was done like a couple years ago. I didn't know he was like still gonna go. So yeah, he's a champ and there's just not a lot going on, and some of the main stars that they're trying to push, they kind of just gave up on, like a Sammy Guevara, Jack Perry for understandable reasons. But MJF is out right now, so there's not a lot really fresh, new, and what they're doing is some of the stuff is just, like, lame, like the Acclaim trying to form the Bang Bang Scissor Gang, something like that. It needs some sort of cohesive identity to get people excited.
Keith, back to you. Anything you want to follow up on there?
No, that's it. I'll let you guys get on with the show.
Cool. Thanks. Appreciate it. 347-215-8558. If you decide to call and you want to be on the show, push 1. Let's go to some emails here. Zach in Texas says, that was a wonderful homecoming for AEW. Daily's place is such a cool venue and visual. I'll pause there, by the way, Andrew. You know, living through the Nitro era, I loved Zane Bresloff as the events coordinator. They sacrificed some gates. Mm-hmm. And I know the bean counters are like, oh, how can you go to South Dakota and lose out on revenue from one show? And I'm like, because it's super memorable, it's distinct, it stands out. It like, there's these intangible benefits to shaking things up. And then the college spring break settings for Nitro were so cool. They would do different things, and it's fun to see wrestling presented in a glossy major league atmosphere. You know, I'm not saying go to some, you know, old high school basketball gymnasium and try to spin that as a positive. Daily's place is cool. Outdoors in January, fans in jackets, and they, you know, the video boards were really well done. I just thought they dressed that up really nice, and it you know, gave a new perspective to things. So I did like that, and you know, we talk about throwbacks. It doesn't have to be Nitro nostalgia to change the way that you present wrestling, but I do like when they change it up. And frankly, I think it would be fun for AEW to look for other ways to run their shows on occasion in settings that are very different than just the standard arena setup. WWE isn't going to do it. And that's one of the ways AEW can differentiate themselves, which Zane Bresloff and Eric Bischoff knew with their vision of trying to make Nitro stand out.
Oh yeah, I think that's a good idea to do stuff more like that, because they're not going to be selling out, like, you know, 10,000 tickets
right
every week like Raw is doing. So you might as well mix it up. And yeah, I mean, it's part of the aesthetics, it's part of the memories. I mean, it's like different, but I know like fans look back fondly, even just like on silly like Halloween Havoc, you know, like how they had the ring set up and everything and all the stage. So it's like memorable visuals like that stand out to people. And yeah, like Sting and Lex Luger like fighting in the ocean to me. Like, a distinct memory, even if it's absurd. But yeah, I love stuff like that. And yeah, I think I weirdly have like nostalgia for Daily's Place, because that's where they went during COVID, and that was like a scary time for the world. And just, you could turn on wrestling for 2 hours and try to like get lost in that world. So yeah, I think it's good when they go to that place, and I'd be absolutely up for them mixing it up more.
Not to bring the show down, but 2024 is a really scary time in the world, too. I was at Huntington Beach for that outdoor WCW show. That was really
nice,
a fun, distinct memory. Speaking of Zane Bresloff, I went up and sat by Zane at the bar across the street from Huntington Beach before the show, and he was sitting with Tank Abbott from UFC fame, and Zane chatted with me for like 2-3 minutes, and then he got up and left me with a very drunk Tank Abbott and didn't come back to the table. He passed Tank Abbott on to me, and I just sat there fearful that if I didn't keep eye contact and chat with him, that he was going to do something that wouldn't be pleasant for me. It was just, you could tell. He was like, you're going to sit here, you're going to listen to me talk. And it was really fun, but it was also really scary. Tank was drunk.
Was that like during the time he was in three count?
No, this was way before that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yep. This was when he was just a UFC guy.
Wow. Okay.
Yep. And yeah. And then Dave Meltzer and I just like body surfed during like two of the matches and then went back and watched it on tape later. Wow. It was a fun time, a very unique experience for pro wrestling. Anyway. So back to that female. I really enjoyed the show. Admittedly, I was anticipating Mercedes Moné debuting, so I was in a bit of a self-induced funk after the women's match, which was really good. But This Is Sting brought me back. Best intro of all time. Sting is an absolute madman. The scorpion death drop off the wall through the table was gnarly. I don't know how I feel about the Bucks being Sting's final opponents. I'll say this. There will be no ambiguity on who to root for, nor do I think it will be a problem if they lose. Overall, it felt like everyone was motivated to call out Wendi Richter and calling Deonna Purrazzo Donna Palazzo. She is operating on a different level right now. I'm here for Deonna. I'm also interested to see how Hook hangs on the deep end with Joe. I explained in my feud tracker at pwtorch.com that him calling out Joe made sense, and I'm glad they let him be the silent badass tonight instead of getting eaten alive on the mic. It definitely feels like AEW is finding itself again, and that's great. So a couple things here. He's endorsing the Scorpion Death Drop. Okay, gnarly might be a good word for it, but more in a literal sense. I did check, by the way, I was told since the show went on there that Sting is fine. That wasn't endorsing he did it, but I was told he's fine. But yeah, it was not great judgment. So happy to pass that along.
Yeah.
Now, how he feels tomorrow, I can't report, but he's walking around backstage. He's not, like, at the hospital or anything. As for the Bucks, do you think it's just a given the Bucks lose, and is that a problem for the Bucks? I think it's a good match, but if the Bucks take time off, hit the reset button, come back as heels, does it, and then Sting retires and Darby goes on to do whatever he does it kind of hurt that the Bucks are Sting's Harlem Globetrotters? But, like, if they come back and they have a fun little feud, but they just job out as a tribute to Sting, does that position them well? And is there a way to book it where you can actually come out with the Bucks being stronger coming out of it?
I think it's fine to have them lose. So you could have them win. If they were finally going to really go in on the Bucks and the Bucks are motivated and they really want to have a strong end of their 30s, into their 40s, like run, like, oh, maybe they could do something devious and win and take the wind out of Sting's sails. I don't think fans would be super into that. I think if you're 27-0 with Sting at this point, you might as well just have him go all the way. He wins, you wish him farewell, and he does one last crazy thing. I think the Bucks could get a bit of a boost if they did it, but overall I think it probably just wouldn't sit well with most people.
Yeah. Matt Jackson, by the way, is going to be 39 in March.
Oh.
So, yeah. But Nick is a spry 34 and not even 34 and a half. So.
I didn't realize they were 5 years apart. Wow.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. He also brought up Tony Storm. Andrew, update us on your thoughts on the Tony Storm journey that we've all been on.
Yeah, I might be a giant hypocrite because every week with Mike, I would just like rant. My rants would be on Orange Cassidy and Danhausen and how I just like didn't want that on my wrestling show. But Toni Storm just wins me over. I think she's fantastic. Like, she's so good at what she does and like her facial expression. She's like legit funny and she's not like dumb best friends type
right.
comedy funny. She's genuinely like, oh, that was a clever line. She's like my favorite thing in wrestling right now to watch because she's just I just picture her like in her off hours like coming up with what she's gonna say and like you know she brings up obscure film people. I was a film student, so like her like bringing up people from the 30s just like delights me. This already has more legs than I thought. I'm enjoying what she's doing, but yeah, I might just be a massive hypocrite and I totally would understand if people are like, this is ridiculous and I don't want it.
I don't even imagine her coming up with stuff when I think of what she does when she's not on TV. I just imagine her being like this all the time and not even coming up with stuff. It's just this is just who she is.
Mm-hmm.
Like that she is just all in on it enough that her family and friends are concerned for her because this is – she's morphed into this and they don't know if they can get her out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy the heck out of it too. And again, there's times you're sort of hypocritical because something that you're philosophically against, you are then okay with it or even enthusiastic in favor of it. But that's a testament to doing something really well, but also making it the exception. You know, if you have everything else is kind of grounded, like the director choosing to film her in black and white is not like casting spells. This isn't like Papa Shango and people, you know, throwing up because he casts a spell, or Danhausen having real powers over people. So in this case, it's like, yeah, it's a production thing, and they do it to humor her because she complains very loudly and is very upset if they don't. So like, oh, let's just give her black and white. That's what she wants. Or she's not even self-aware, and they just do it because it applies. I mean, you can come up with your own explanation for it, and many work. And otherwise, she's had some setbacks, and she ended up losing herself in another time frame, another world that she was passionate about, and then became delusional in sort of like thinking that she is something from the past that she isn't, and losing track of even what century she's in. Well, okay, I'm willing to buy into that. Like compared to, like I say, Papa Shango, you know, that can't exist in the universe that WWF created if you're going to take it at all seriously. Same way you can't when there's a camera in a car, when how could you see it coming? That something was going to happen in the car, and how did we get a live feed to the car? That's just ridiculous. AW did it once. I texted Tony about it. I'm like, is this really what you're going to endorse? And then he tried to explain it. Well, you know, there's security cameras in cars now. I'm like, yes, but how did you have a live feed and know that you needed to be connected to it? And in so many words, he's like, good point. We've never seen it again.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like,
nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not quoting good point. I just got the sense he thought it was a good point.
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact wording. But he hasn't done that type of thing since. So there's things that just make no sense in the context of the narrative structure of wrestling. Toni Storm doesn't violate those. They give her black and white, and she's delusional and thinks she's something from the past. Or she's putting on an act to get TV time because she's cunning. I mean, you can, like I said, what's the phrase for a book where you kind of pick your own ending, or a movie, or pick your own adventure? Like, you can come up with your own explanation for it, but there's multiple plausible ones. And then in the end, as long as it's really well done and consistently entertaining, and it's not just goofy, bad nerd humor like Matt Taven and Mike Bennett are doing, or the best friends are doing, you know, everybody got to get the people what they want. Well, okay, yeah, so stop doing it then. This is different than that. There's my defense.
Yeah. Oh, and just like, I think you made a good point too, when you talk about like how like good the performer is at, because if you look at like WWF, WWE, like we could be looking back at The Undertaker in a different light and be like, oh, remember when they did a stupid mortician, like a dead zombie, but he was so good at it. And instead we look, you know, it's not like we look back and go like, oh, remember the wrestling plumber and the wrestling repo man? Like,
yeah.
Well, the Repo Man was good at that point, that role. I'll give him that. But other wrestlers, yeah, you just look back and go, that was ridiculous. But Taker made it work, and I think in a completely, not to directly compare them, but like Toni Storm just as a performer is like making that work.
So Andrew's saying Toni Storm the next Undertaker.
I want to be on record, yes.
Yes. Okay. The point Zach brought up that I want to pluck out of his email to conclude, his email, is Hook. How do you feel about Hook getting the title shot, asking for one, getting granted one, going forehead to forehead with Joe? What do you want to see? Are you concerned about what might happen next week? Is this a good step for Hook if he competes but loses? Do you want to see him lose, or should they do a non-finish? Obviously, Hook's not ending Joe's title reign. And does this hurt Joe if he sells too much for Hook, or is Hook untested but also barely beaten with a very record against very inferior competition to most people who are getting world title shots? There's a lot of things they can do here, and I think ways it can work, ways it might not be good. Your thoughts, predictions, analysis of this?
Yeah, I have no problem with this. I'm actually like looking forward to the match. I mean, if you do look at from it like a kayfabe perspective, like wrestling's real and there is a championship committee, like you would think Hook is pretty dang talented, because on the show, he beats most people. You know, he beat the majority of his opponents within like 2 minutes. He manhandled Jack Perry, who's like a former tag champ. So I could see if this was real and you were on a championship committee, like Joe was saying, you could be like, yeah, okay, let's give this guy a shot. He's 27-1, has one of the best records in the company, probably second best record next to Sting, just like percentage wise. And I think, I mean, Hook still, he's not as far along in the ring as I was hoping he would be at this point. But I think him and Joe just like throwing each other around for, you know, 10 minutes could be a bit of fun. It's going to help Hook like be in a big match if they want to like build around him in the future. I have zero problem with this. I wish Tony hadn't lost his mind over it.
He doesn't have anything to be defensive about. I don't want to go off on it again, but Tony could say, if someone is critical of Hook, he could reply to them directly, which I'd advise he not do. I don't think he should see the tweet because he should be busy doing other things more important. But if he does see it, I don't think he should respond. But if he sees it and responds, the response should be, I think our fans are going to like this. Maybe I'm wrong. We're making a good faith effort to tell a good story here. And I think you'll be I hope and predict you'll be the exception, not the majority, in being critical of this, because we are going to tell the story well, with attention to some of the things that you think we are likely to be sloppy about. I mean, whatever. There's a way to just come across as a reasonable guy who understands not everyone's going to agree with you. Some people are going to disagree with you. Some are going to insincerely disagree with you as trolls, just looking for their day to gain validity because somebody of Tony's power is ranting about them. And you can show them all up by being thick-skinned and optimistic, and also accept the fact that not everyone's going to love everything you do, but you believe in what you do. And it's just started, so see it through before you're critical of it.
And, taking that approach, way more people would have been behind Hook and excited for Hook online. And instead, it's crazy, when I was reading Reddit, everyone is super excited about Jinder Mahal, which is crazy, but he made people excited about Jinder Mahal. So, he could have kept some of that for himself or his own company.
Yeah. All right, up next, let's go to Shay from Brooklyn. And being a Daily's Place already has a nice nostalgic feel to it. I love the setup tonight. The company really came through during the pandemic, and tonight had that familiar, special feeling. Wardlow's body language and facial expressions have been excellent in these segments so far. He's clearly just using the Undisputed Kingdom to get the world title, knowing full well he could destroy them once he gets what he wants. Shay has more to say. I'll pause there. Your thoughts on Undisputed Kingdom, Andrew, and Wardlow as part of it, and if you think that, Wardlow is just sort of pretended to be with these goofs, but he's really just waiting till the moment he strikes.
Strongly dislike how they're doing the story with Wardlow right now. I mean, as it's been pointed out, I mean, why don't on night one, already tease dissension between them.
Right.
I wish Adam Cole would have just said, hey, Wardlow's going to go for the title. He's going to win the title. And we agreed that when he wins the title, I get to be his opponent when I'm ready.
Yep.
Something like that.
And there's nothing wrong with what you said, but another option is we have two people who are world title contenders. We're both going to be battling hard to win the most matches to get and these are magic to my ears, these words, the championship committee's attention through our dominant victories. And really, if you look at the 100 people in AEW, there's two who are racing to be the next champion, and they're both in this group. That's how good we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because otherwise we're doing a straight-up rerun of MJF, basically, and Wardlow from a few years ago.
Or Luchasaurus and Christian.
Oh, yeah.
They're literally doing that same, a similar storyline there of, well, I'll be champion. He'll be champion, but give me the belt. It's just so many things wrong with that approach.
Yeah, and just I'm not really into the group as a whole. It just feels like kind of a retread of Undisputed Era from NXT. Matt Taven and Mike Bennett have been too goofy. Roderick Strong's been too goofy.
They stripped Roderick of everything that was entertaining about him now.
Yeah, I mean,
they're trying to sell him as Dean Malenko or Chris. I don't even know now.
Yeah, it's just a weird mix. I would have picked. I'm fine with Adam Cole being the devil, but I would have picked, I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know who I would have picked, but I wouldn't have picked the other wrestlers to be in his stable.
Yeah, I'm not impressed with the group, and I don't think even Adam Cole has the gravitas in this environment with that group in this angle. And, you know, it just, Cole made himself out to be such a goof. And I really feel cheated that we haven't had Adam Cole explicitly and specifically gloating about the ride that he took MJF on and how he wasn't sincere. And he tricked MJF into thinking it was his friend, and he acted like this just goof, and he can't believe MJF didn't see through him, because Cole was such a goof that unless it was a con all along, that it feels like, how can I take this guy seriously as this like centerpiece alpha wrestler? You can't. I mean, he wasn't a serious person during this whole thing. It was, you know, I felt that way about some of the stuff Triple H and Shawn Michaels did in later era DX, where it's just zany bad dad humor. And it's like, I don't want to think of Shawn Michaels and the legendary matches and great careers had in Triple H as this is who they really are. And so much of what Cole did was just, it was so not, again, just not being a serious person. He has owned as him being phony to take MJF on a ride. Shivani's doing the heavy lifting by going, it was a long game plan. But I want Cole to gloat.
Yeah.
I want him to gloat. How could MJF think I liked him? Did you people watch me and think I really liked MJF? Was my acting that good? I didn't even think my acting was that good, because it wasn't. He should be owning that and making fun of MJF and the fans for buying into it. There's this material there that's just being like not put into these promos, and instead we get generic heel faction leader 101 promo from Adam Cole. It's not the worst, but it's not particularly good. Mm-hmm. It's bland and it's forgettable. He should be gloating about what he did and reframing it so that we realize that isn't who he really is, that he's always, that he, or where the transition period was. It's such a letdown. This payoff is, and I understand there's some timeline things they aren't going to be able to make work, because knee injury and some change in plans. They were going a certain direction. They had to change it. Who cares? That doesn't mean abandon any kind of reference to what happened in the past and framing it. And again, I just want Cole to gloat and own what he did and let us in on what was going on in his head during all those times we thought he was a slave, you know, doing all this stuff around the house. But he should say, in reality, we're drinking till 3 a.m. every night and having a blast and then filming these skits, and you all bought it. Like, and they're not referencing all this stuff. It just feels like you get to the last chapter of a mystery novel, and it's not perfect analogy, but you introduce some new character who did it, and you don't know anything about him or whatever. You know, it's like the payoff just hasn't been good.
Yeah, I definitely agree on that. I remember talking with Mike at the time, and we were both just like, we weren't sure how the angle with MJF and Cole was going to pan out, but we were like, why would we like Cole at the end of this if he's going to be like a good guy? Because he's so amazingly stupid. Like, he's mowing this guy's lawn, he's moving his furniture, he's making him peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, he's not like going home, he's not, you know, spending time with his girlfriend, he's just like doing all these chores for somebody. And it's just like, you know, I think part of like what makes a successful babyface is like you kind of maybe want to be that person, you know, at least like younger days. Like, you would be like, I wish I was The Rock. I'd be so cool. I wish I could be like Steve Austin and tell off my boss. When I looked at Adam Cole, it's like, do I want to like go jump around with kids at this trampoline park? Like, is that, do I want to do like goofy Crocodile Dundee skits? Like, this guy's so lame. And then, yeah, the storyline itself just doesn't make any sense. So yeah, I think he's been booked to be such a loser the past like few months that he doesn't strike me as this evil, devious, you know, heel leader like a Hulk, you know, Hulk Hogan, pick your person, Triple H and Evolution. He has none of that like gravitas to him.
No, and it doesn't help that Matt Taven and Mike Bennett are standing behind him. And it, you know, I think they tried to be a little more serious tonight, which is good, but you can't erase the memory that they just always looked like they had some really juvenile inside joke that they were laughing to themselves about. You know, I mean, yeah. I mean, anyone who finds Melvin funny, as long as Matt Taven did, or clever, you know, it's just like I mean, what I say about Roderick Strong, like, he finally was entertaining and now they stripped him of it. Like, I'd rather he wasn't in this group and just got to keep being, you know, having a personality. I mean, no disrespect, but it's your public figure in a performance business, and Roderick was pretty bland.
Yeah.
Like his entire career on the blander side.
Yep.
And he finally found something where it was like, wow, I kind of look forward to his segments. And I mean, he had to grow. There had to be better material than just yelling people's names, but he had comic timing I would have never guessed he had. And he could have grown into something, and now he's stuck in this group being a guy who's like their Dean Malenko, I guess. I don't know. I mean, so.
Yeah, in the same way, I never cared about him as a wrestler until he started doing that initial stuff. And yeah, and especially like now, like being the Dean Malenko of the group doesn't like do anything for you because there's about 40 good wrestlers on the roster, whereas like back in WCW days, there was 8, you know.
Yeah.
He doesn't stand out in that way.
No, no. All right, so back to Shay. He says, Joe as champ is everything I was hoping for. He has big top guy energy right now, much like what they started during MJF's reign. There are multiple people going after the champ. Being on top should always feel important, and it definitely feels that way right now. Swerve and Paige feel like worthy challengers, though Hook feels less likely to win. I'm really excited to see what Hook and Joe's match look like next week. I love that Joe, and I've always been critical of Joe when he's yelling, overmodulating, frothing at the mouth. Anybody can yell, and it almost never works. It's almost always grating, and it just feels like hack promos. And Joe is engaged in that more than he's engaged in it, and I'm not a fan of that style. I think there's occasions where it's worth yelling at the top of your lungs. But like Dolph Ziggler just thought, the louder you yell, the better your promo is. Why hasn't everyone else figured that out? It's like, well, because you're an idiot. when it comes to your philosophy on promos, that yelling does not make a promo better, and someone should tell you that. There's, you know, way more Dolph could have cut way more better promos in his career if he was talk softer. Jake Roberts was always a soft talker. Sid even figured that out. Sid would yell, but then he'd talk really soft. What do you remember what he said? You remembered when you had to lean into the TV to hear what he was saying. Joe is amazing, like fantastic when he's cool, calm, matter-of-fact Joe, who doesn't feel like he has a lot to prove to you, but there's an intensity that sort of is understated in just the way he carries himself. There is that aura that I talked about Sting having, and Joe has it, and when he yells, it feels sort of undignified and desperate, and why are you yelling? You don't need to. You intimidated me the second you just stood there. So I've really liked his demeanor tonight, and he is right now does have big top guy energy. So I like that. So anything you want to comment on there about Joe's vibe tonight?
Yeah. I think it's definitely on the higher end of what he's done throughout his career. But I think, you know, he was like, if you look back in TNA, I imagine he just had so many bad people producing him on what to do. And, you know, nobody likes that cut, like dial it down 50%. And just kind of talk. So yeah, he would do a lot of those like screaming weird promos. I wish he'd been doing like this stuff way more throughout his career. I think he'd be in a better spot in general.
Yeah. All right. Next, Shay says the Young Bucks are still one of my favorite teams, and heel Young Bucks are even better. Forbidden Door gave us a nice preview of what Young Bucks versus Sting and Darby would look like. Everyone is going to be super motivated, and there's no doubt that's going to be a great showing. Chris Jericho's music playing throughout the run-in gave the segment a unique touch, like when they played the Jon Moxley song throughout the action in Anarchy in the Arena match a while back. Not sure if it was a strategic way to drown out any boos or NDA chants, but it came across well regardless. I don't know. Eric Kroll texted me and said it's like New Jack, where his music could play during his matches in ECW. I took it as their plausible deniability, but a way to make sure Jericho's not embarrassed with any continued inertia over the allegations against him and, you know, being booed or NDA chants. So his next match without music playing is going to be the test of kind of where things stand, Andrew.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I think that's probably why they did that. I wrote that down in my notes that seemed a bit odd because I don't believe they've ever done that before for him.
No, they haven't.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm with you. It's going to be very curious to see how people actually react. And I guess it was a smart move on his part if that's what he pitched tonight to kind of give him some more time. But I'm very curious if people are going to continue booing him on Saturday.
Not that they would not have otherwise, but maybe they wouldn't have. They found a group of fans cheering and chanting and singing Jericho, you know, during the brawl. And then in the end, he was kind of, you know, surrounded by fans who were high-fiving him and stuff.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to have visual evidence that, hey, the world's not against MJF or against Jericho, and this is a thing that was, you know, internet generated, blown out of proportion, and a bunch of people decided to you know, amplify it before all the facts were in and blow it out of proportion. Tonight, look at it. It obviously isn't a big deal. Well, that'll be tested when his music doesn't play. So we'll see. But if you're a PR agent for Jericho, I think what they did tonight, what turned out well, even if in a way it drew attention to something that had the crowd not booed him, mm-hmm. it would have seemed less obvious that they're, you know, in damage control mode by playing his music, which, like you said, they haven't done before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tony Storm has another A-plus segment. Overall, a really fun show. The last two shows have been a great way to start a new year. There's a lot of fresh directions. Andrew, anything you want to add to that?
I'm not sure. I guess there's fresh directions. I'm not totally on board with all of them, like the acclaimed one I brought up earlier.
Oh,
that's got bad news written all over it. So, but yeah, I guess
where do you think that's going? I don't think, like, Anthony Bones making this, it seems like a sincere pitch.
Yeah.
But is this a way to, like, you know, split off Max Caster as a heel or Anthony Bones as a heel or have them split up, or is it a ploy? Like, I mean, it's fine that we don't know. They don't have to telegraph everything, but is there a way that you could see this kind of going in the next 2 to 6 weeks where you're like, oh yeah, this makes sense and everyone's in a better place for it? I don't think having them combine genuinely into a 6-person team, faction makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, I guess just for starters, I think the whole thing's idiotic because it doesn't make any sense. Like on Collision, they were saying like, hey, the only way to get ahead in this company is to join, you know, have a big faction. And it's like, what? You already have the belts that you want. Like, what more are you trying to do here?
And what faction is Samoa Joe in? Or
yeah.
Tony Storm?
Right.
I mean, like, there's people walking around with championships who are not in a faction. So if you're going to declare that, I mean, like, don't have the evidence counter it.
Yeah, or like the big faction right now only has the ROH tag titles. Like, good for them. I just think it's going to be the Bullet Club makes it seem like they're going to all join forces and then turns their back on them and we get a brief feud. That's probably as far as it goes.
Yeah. All right. Up next, Jorad from Canada says, I'm watching Dynamite and an interesting idea popped into my head. What if Kevin Dunn was the one behind the visual presentation of Dynamite? Given the difference in AEW's creative process, format, and scripting philosophy, would this combination of things be better or worse with Kevin Dunn's production style? So I guess when we say Kevin Dunn, we just are sort of generically saying WWE the last 40 years. And if do you think Kevin Dunn could come in and change things for the better, or would he change things for the worse? You know, you don't want AEW to just look like some derivative, lower-budget copy of what WWE is doing, but are there some things you think AEW could benefit from with Kevin Dunn going in and kind of whipping people into shape and doing some things maybe differently?
I don't think so. I think if they had a much higher production budget, maybe. But the only thing I could think of that he would do would be those crazy, nauseating camera angles. Because you just like watch WWE and it just looks like so amazingly good. I mean, even just like the Judgment Day comes out and they have this huge like screen behind them and they have graphics on the screen.
Reality, their usage of augmented reality is so slick.
Yeah.
And it blends in. Like, it's not, I don't think it's gaudy or, you know, like Asuka, like her ring entrances with augmented reality were so cool. It just, it's such a visually stimulating show. Using the latest technology and, you know, AEW, I mean, you don't need to do that to be a really good, successful wrestling company. So I'll stipulate to that. But AEW does feel like they picked up where Nitro and sadly some weeks Thunder left off with no advancement.
Yeah, I mean, and I barely watch WWE these days, but I catch it now and then. So when I just, like, turn on and see somebody come out to their entrance, I'm like, oh, wow, that is a huge step up over AEW's. I guess just go back to Kevin Dunn. He wouldn't have that kind of budget behind him, and I don't think it would be a good – for their fan base, I don't think people would get excited about Kevin Dunn coming in. I think it would just be a bad move.
All right, Chris in New Jersey says, Wade, what grade A through F would you give Claudio Castagnoli since his June 2020 debut in AEW? And should AEW have shown the exchange of the Triple B belt to the new AEW championship? I know, like, Claudio, I give it like a B. It's fine. Claudio was defined down enough in his career. It would have been tough to bring him in and just like treat him as a centerpiece act. But he did just sort of show up and the idea was, oh, AEW gave him a chance. And the chance they gave him that WWE didn't is just getting through what everybody in AEW is able to do, which is have really good matches with really good opponents that last maybe a little longer than they would have gotten on TV and WWE. But from a character development standpoint, you know, he's the second, third, fourth guy in a faction at any given time. And he's the designated, you know, jobber who's going to beat people lower than him, but never really make it to the top. And I'm not sure that that's the wrong role for him, but I also think you could have gotten more out of him in the last, you know, if they had. Yeah, just said, okay, we're not going to be able to build around it for the next 5 years, but I think we can get a 9 guy, and we just kind of show Vince McMahon what he missed out on. And I don't think they really had that approach with him. He was just came in, and people love working with him, but his limitations, I don't think, were hidden anymore. And his strengths, I don't think, were accentuated anymore than WWE. The atmosphere was just more conducive to his strengths sort of shining.
Yeah, I think a B is probably exactly what I would give him, BB minus maybe. He's been fine. I think what they do, I think he's where he should be right now. I imagine he's in his early 40s. He's not somebody you're going to build the company around. He should be there putting guys. One of the things I did like tonight is that he put over Hangman Queen. I think that's what they should be doing. Yeah, he's never been a great promo, and just it's not, you know, he could have been way more in WWE. It's not his fault, but yeah, to be pushed so poorly for, I don't know, 10 years it must have been, and then to, yeah, it would have been like the TNA approach to bring in somebody and then push them towards the top and have them go, you know, you wouldn't want them going over a bunch of like AEW homegrown talent. That would have been a bad look. So no, like not much fault of his own, but they, AEW, yeah, they probably could have gotten a little bit more out of him, but I don't think they like missed out by like not making him a main eventer or anything.
Yeah. How about the new belts? And I it's weird. We got some references to MJF, allusions to him, little bit the last couple of weeks since the pay-per-view, but it doesn't, they don't want to spend a lot of time talking about him. You know, the expectation is he'll come back and it'll be, you know, the MJF fatigue will have subsided, as MJF put it. But I don't know. I mean, you're drawing attention to, I thought calling it the Triple B was just kind of silly anyway, because it was, you know, originated when he was doing the whole, you know, WWE countdown and, yeah, you know, trying to agitate Triple H, so I'll call it Triple B. And I don't think people even generally know what that's a reference to, and it just sort of got lost over time. So I don't know. I'm fine with them. Just, you know, we talk about fresh starts. Sometimes you want a visual transition, and other times you just want to just show up and be different. And I think just showing up and being different is good.
Yeah, I'm fine with them just kind of like moving away from all that. I mean, MJF didn't like make a big deal of the Triple B, and I don't even know what it, Burberry something belt. I don't even know what it stands for.
Yeah, yeah, it's like the brand of scarf he wears. There's a
Sword
Mall of America.
Oh, is the B? The Burberry. Is that two of the yeah, B's? And there's not an okay.
Yeah. All right, we'll close mailbag here with JB from Detroit. Number one, I thought that AEW did a good job of sprinkling in the Brody Daly's Place memories throughout the Homecoming show tonight. Did you like that, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, it worked. I think they did want to tribute to him a couple of weeks ago too, right? The anniversary.
Yeah,
it was fine. I mean, it is a little weird to be like, you're going to have 2 8-person matches and the winner is both going to be people that were like in his group. It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, and have strong feelings, by the way.
Yeah.
Number two, I wasn't a fan of how they set up the audience and stage in Daly's Place tonight. It made everything feel smaller and segmented. I'm not sure this is how they did it previously, but it felt hollow to me tonight. But I like the setting. Not for even the nostalgia of, the COVID era and all that. It's just, I think they did a good job at the amphitheater. I saw Jason Paul in his report, like, was questioning aiming the camera at the side with the fewest fans. But it had the video boards, and you could see the fans sort of in the foreground, and they did enough other camera angles. I thought it worked. I think if they aimed the camera the other way, they would show that there's like a lot of seats that weren't full in the very back. So production-wise, I was fine. I was fine with the angles they chose, and I think there was a sound reasoning behind it. And overall, I liked the novelty of the setup.
Yeah, same. I like the look, and it, only having like a few rows of people, that didn't bother me for that.
Number three, I like Hook, but should he really be in the same title challenger segment with Swerve and Hangman? That being said, I'm excited to see what Hook can do in such a high-level program. He got a great reaction tonight. Hopefully this confidence push can heat him back up to the levels of his introduction in AEW. How do you feel about the path that Hook's been on, Andrew? How red-hot he was a couple years ago and how cooled off he has been. I think some of that was, he's a good kid, but he's not a natural in the traditional sense of working a match. It's a feature and a flaw in a way that he doesn't feel like just another wrestler coming up through the indie scene. But he was really green, and he wasn't ready. His popularity was way ahead of his skill level. But this is I'm intrigued and curious about what they do with him next week and the type of match he has, and we'll kind of learn where they see him right now, and what the plan is. I'm going to give it time to play out before I judge it, and you know, Hook could surprise us. Joe's a great worker, and maybe they'll come up with something really special. But I don't think they can get his popularity back to where it was in the way that it was. I think it's going to have to be earned over time.
Yeah, that was crazy how over he was for a few months. That is something that's very hard to continue on for. I think it would have been a better approach, I think, just to like kind of go like the Goldberg route when he first debuted, just keep that going, have him beat lower level people, because he wasn't ready for like a big program yet. So that's just like part of the show. He's going to keep like mowing through people. But I kind of what I was saying before, like, you know, part of wrestling, I think, is like, you like the people that you wish you were like. So I could see people, younger people being like, yeah, I wish I was like Hook, until he starts hanging out with Danhausen and then the best friends. And it's like, oh, he's just a dork who sits there and eats chips. Like,
yep.
Eh. Yep. I think that's where they kind of went wrong with him. And hopefully he moves away from that stuff. And yeah, I liked his short promo. Just like do stuff like that. 30-second, I'm going to beat you and I'm tough. And that's it. Like, don't overcomplicate it.
Yeah. All right, much like was set up with MJF and Joe is being surrounded by interesting challengers. I hope that AEW continues to make this a priority and takes detailed care of each storyline. There's so many belts in AEW, but that doesn't mean they can't make that world title feel more important than everything else combined. And, you know, Joe does bring a serious gravitas to this, the presentation of the belt that MJF lost along the way. So, yeah, and, you know, have multiple people not necessarily immediately challenging hearing people talking about the championship, but you know, you've got Cole and Wardlow, you've got obviously Swerve and Hangman, you've got Hook. MJF is sort of looming. Yeah, I mean, I I'm fine with if they pick two or three other guys to talk about, you know, hey, I'm going to work. I want to impress the championship committee and earn my way into a title match, even if it's not planned. Just having people talk about it, even if it doesn't happen, makes that title and it feel more important.
Yeah. Oh, I think that should always be going on. Like, have a couple people talking about how they want the title, or like that's their long-term goal. They want to like pick up the wins. Yeah, I think that's just smart to always have people in the back of like fans' minds, like, oh, maybe they could be challenging next sort of thing. So, yeah.
Number five, he says, was it a good idea to put Sammy over Ricky Starks, even if Ricky and Bill retain the tag titles and battle the belts on Saturday? I think that it's obvious that Ricky has much more singles potential than Sammy does all around. Do you agree with that? Ricky has more singles potential than Sammy, Andrew? Have you gone back and forth on that at all? Because I don't think they're that far apart, no matter what your position is. And Starks just losing clean. I mean, I don't know if his deal's coming up and they're just like, we're going to get something out of him before he goes. It had that vibe to it because they don't usually book that bluntly. But, you know, they talked about, he took two super kicks. It's hard to get up from that. So, yeah, what's your take on the finish and what's your take on the comparison between the two?
I obviously have no knowledge of the situation of his contract, but I've just been assuming for the past few months he's on his way out and he's looking forward to kind of rejoining Cody and WWE when he can. I would say I'm higher. I don't think neither guy is the main event talent. I think Ricky Starks is up. It has more, a higher ceiling. I just think Sammy hasn't quite found himself. Although I guess there's still a lot of potential in Sammy Guevara, but he just, it's kind of frustrating because he just hasn't like found it yet. And they keep moving him, switching him back and forth. So I think he's just going to be in a rut for a while longer, unfortunately.
Yeah. Don't have much data that I agree. All right, number six, Adam Cole and the Undisputed Kingdom seem to be getting genuine heat, which is a good thing in this cool heel era. I just wish they'd changed their name to create some differentiation from the Cole Rowdy Undisputed run in NXT. Yeah, the name Undisputed, is that, are they stretching it out kind of like Bullet Club Gold, where people are like, all right, come on, let's come up with some original stuff?
Yeah, I think so. I don't have too much more to add to that. I don't like the name. I don't hate it, but it doesn't anger me, but it's not good.
Yeah. And then, does the Darby Sting team really need Ric Flair to take the limelight away from them on a weekly basis as we built the Sting's last match at Revolution in March? Yeah, is Flair a net positive or net negative overall to Sting's retirement tour? I mean, obviously there's a connection there and all of that, but I mean, you could have built up minus an energy drink if you were willing to get in the Ric Flair business to just the week before Sting's final match, say Ric Flair is going to make an appearance at Dynamite next week, and he's going to have some words for Sting as heads into his final match, and you need to be here to hear what he has to say. These two are as linked as any two wrestlers in history. You know, whatever, you know, do your promoter hype, and Ric Flair, and you could get a lot out of that as opposed mm-hmm. to him, you know, just kind of bopping in and out for months at a time, or for, you know, a few months here leading up to it.
Yeah, I don't think they should be in the Ric Flair business. It makes Tony look like a hypocrite for some of his online attacks. Flair just doesn't provide a lot. I get it from, like, Tony's standpoint. If, like, Sting came to him and he's like, hey, is this something we could do? Could you bring in Ric? It would mean a lot to me. I get it from that point, but I don't think he adds much to that act. I think he detracts more than he adds to it.
I think Tony could escape the hypocrite framing if he didn't say Ric Flair's all elite and we signed Ric Flair and like act excited, but instead just literally be like, hey folks, Sting's retiring. Flair's a big part of Sting's history. The wrestlers wanted it. Sting wanted it. I didn't want to say no. I'm not going to get into how, you know, anything else. Cause we're not interested in doing a lot with Ric Flair, regardless of how I feel about the amazing career he had that will hold up historically. You know, we can throw some compliments in without endorsing or discounting the more recent controversies and the things that have come out about him. I think there's a way it could have been really smoothly handled and people would be like, yeah, okay, Flair's showing up the week before Sting's retirement match and giving and showing up dignified, wearing a suit, not being goofy, and you know, crazy-eyed old man Ric Flair, but just a dignified former world champion, giving a serious kind of final pep talk to Sting. I think people would have accepted that and been okay with it. So I think you could have had Flair part of the Sting storyline without criticism. And yeah, I don't know that it's overshadowing Sting, but I don't know. We've talked a lot about the WCW vibes and there's a lot of things about this that I think have some negatives that offset some of the positives that could have been there if it had been presented differently and less often.
Yeah, agreed. Yep.
And finally, he says, those rolling German duplexes that Takeshita delivered to Darby on the ramp and outside the ring these last 2 weeks look absolutely brutal on Darby's neck and back. I shudder to think of this man's future health, but he seems to be well-informed of the consequences, so I suppose it isn't much different from football or contact sports in that regard. Yeah, Darby, Andrew. we chuckle just because it's – yeah, I mean, he hopefully he is aware of the price that he is likely paying for all this.
I sure hope so. I mean, I guess the one thing he has going for him is that he probably only wrestles, I don't know, 50 matches a year at most. I could be wrong. Maybe he's taking some indie dates, but I don't know. But so he's not doing like the 200, he's not doing that 200 nights a year. But yeah, he must be the luckiest wrestler out there overall, because there's been so many bumps where I just thought, oh, this could be the end of his career. This could be, you know, he might be out for a year. He must have broken his arm on this one, but man, he's somehow survived it all.
Yeah. Anything else from Dynamite you want to bring up before we sign off here, Andrew?
Just looking through my notes quick. No, I think we mostly covered it all. Yeah.
My final topic for you, just because you've been away for a while, is what do you think about how they've used Adam Copeland and where he is as of tonight in the – I mean, you would think, you know, the guy who was signed to kind of replace CM Punk in a way, yeah, you know, our big signing, legendary figure and all that. We talk about, you know, WCW nostalgia. There's some obvious 2000s nostalgia that Tony Khan has for WWE too. How have you felt about how they've used him and the value he could have brought and has brought?
I'm surprised it has not gone better. Obviously, I think that was a big step down from, like, CM Punk excitement level, but I thought he would bring in more excitement to his matches, to his programs, and he just feels like – he doesn't feel like this legendary figure, like, on the program. It seems like after, like, week one, that just, like, died off. I think it's what he's been doing has been fine. I mean, I, you know, doing the feud with Christian was mostly entertaining. I don't dislike the idea of him, you know, doing the open challenge and, you know, giving a rub to some younger talent. But yeah, it's not, it just doesn't feel big. It doesn't feel special. Yeah. And I don't know. And I don't know if that's going to change anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're just seeing how big a star he is. And
yeah,
maybe, you know, we talk about Claudio, maybe, you know, they could have got a little more out of him before he settled into the kind of the level he's that, you know, was meant to be at. And with Copeland, it's not like that he had to be CM Punk, but I think they could have gotten more out of him than they have before he kind of settled into being a level two legend and not a level one legend. Yeah. And it just doesn't seem like he came in with, you know, a real mission statement other than I don't want to fight Christian. And that's just clearly a setup for he's going to do or say something to you that's going to make you want to fight him. But now what? And, you know, I wouldn't put him in a random 8-man tag that where he just is another guy. Like I don't think tonight was a good way to use him, because you shouldn't take somebody you're paying that much money to, has that much history, and put him in a situation where he's that lost in the crowd.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. I mean, when he came in, you probably would not have predicted within 3 months he'll be wrestling Chris Garrison on the second match on Collision. So
yeah,
something's kind of gone a bit wrong.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else you want to update your fans, Andrew, about? I feel silly saying that about, you know, whatever. You know what I mean? But there's people with you guys. Anything new that you want to pass along or anything before we sign off here?
No, I think, you know, Mike is, you know, he's like you said, his work hours have shifted. He's got a good thing going, writing about, I think, like the Bruins. I should ask him. I forgot. But, yeah, he's got a good thing going, but he's very busy. So we've kind of talked maybe doing something in the spring, so hopefully we'll be back someday. If not, I'm sure I'll pop. If I'm invited back, pop up on here.
Oh, yeah,
more.
For sure, yeah.
So otherwise, yeah, no, otherwise no big updates, but I am still following along, and yeah, I'm here.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you for doing this. It was great touching base with you again, and I'm sure fans of your show will enjoy hearing your updated views on things.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Yep. Take care, and thanks to our listeners. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you all next time.